Last week, we looked at rule setting and the principles for establishing healthy boundaries. This is the last in our current series of six, although we are planning more, so watch this space. Today, we look at an overarching issue. Should I be my child's best friend? Sounds such a beautiful sentiment, and I've heard it articulated on several occasions. Not only is he my son, but he is my best friend. Let's spend a few minutes discussing this topic. As always, we begin with definitions. The term friend covers a vast range of relationships. Of course, in the Facebook world, we measure our own popularity by our number of friends. But that actually threatens to devalue the terminology itself. A friend is not someone who knows what you had for breakfast, but who deeply cares if you had time for lunch. In the world of social media, there is a danger that we have cheapened the term and corrupted the importance of real friendship. Often the term friends means someone with whom one hangs out. In my day, it was called a good mate. More recently, amongst girls, a bestie. This is someone with whom one shares interests, music, and often fashion. Sometimes parents aspire to be as cool as their children, dressing in contemporary style, keeping up with the latest fads, in an attempt to stay in touch with their children. In my view, this is a mistake. Whilst it's utterly vital that we have a clear understanding of the world of our children, especially that of social media, but they need us to be their anchor in a society of increasing instability. Somewhere within, they recognise that the world is fast-paced and unreliable and transitory. In contrast, we need to be resilient, consistent, and a safe haven. So yes, we need to understand their lives, but not take up residence in their space. Judaism encourages the development of real friendships. We are instructed to acquire a friend. And in fact, this is placed on par with the importance of a spiritual mentor. But this type of friend is a confidant, one with whom one can share deepest secrets, both dreams and failings, with complete confidence they'll be treated seriously. This type of friendship is based and built on genuine trust, with the knowledge that there is no other agenda other than absolute care and love for each other. There is no question that as parents, we certainly want to become that type of friend to our children. This does not happen overnight, but is the result of years of non-judgmental listening and sensitive guidance. It's never too late to start, but the earlier the better. It isn't always easy as a parent to hold back, especially when our children are sharing with us areas where they have not met our expectations. But by holding back, we invite them in. Remember the golden rule. No one can hear until they've been heard. We want to create an environment in which it is safe to share shortcomings without risk of criticism. Where there are two parents at home, this begins with the way that they speak to each other. Children observe that and pick up the cues. My closest friend once sent me a text a couple of days before Yom Kippur. He wrote, and I quote, "Malx, you know me well enough. What should I work on to improve in this coming year?" I wrote back, "Why don't you ask your wife?" To which he responded, "Her list is too long." He wasn't being phony. A true friend doesn't just tell you what you want to hear, but finds the right way to tell you what you need to hear. Let's close this first series with a general thought from the Torah on parenting. We all know that the time will come when our children will leave the nest. They'll be in a big wide world, having to make decisions on their own. We hope and dream and pray that those decisions will be consistent with our aspirations for them. In the Torah, Joseph was 17 years old when he was kidnapped, sent to Egypt, and bought as a slave. He became the manager of the household of a man named Potiphar. However, Potiphar's wife wanted to seduce Joseph, who was good-looking and charismatic. At the critical moment, Joseph almost succumbed, but resisted and fled the home. For this, he is given a title, Joseph the Righteous. This is like receiving an MBE before you are 20, and a title reserved for the few. This was, after all, a moment of heroism in the throes of adolescence. Yet if we delve a little deeper into the sources, we find that at the instant of potential collapse, a vision of his saintly father appeared at the window. If this was a miraculous recurrence, then why was he given this great tribute? It was God who intervened to restrain him. In fact, the commentaries explain that this vision wasn't a miracle. It was a product of Joseph's own mind. He conjured up that picture of his father, and that fortified him. He had a deep and meaningful relationship with his father and understood the values of the family. Even at the age of 17, hundreds of miles from home, this determined his choices. This was the ultimate test of the success of the parenting that he had received. And it is the ultimate prayer of the parenting that we are practicing. May we all be blessed. Thank you for listening.